So this work is done with my co-first author, Ray, other colleagues at MSR, Shaw, Shaz, and Yuri, and also my advisor, Dave. So nowadays, a lot of modern applications are empowered by online services. And these online services, they're actually developed by a third party. For example, this chart taken from BuildWiz.com shows that more than 20% of the top 10,000 websites use Facebook for Websites SDK. And also, more than 15% of them use Twitter SDK. And you can see the trend is still on the rise. So a lot of these websites, they integrate such SDKs because they want to implement single sign-on service. And the single sign-on service helps the developers to quickly and easily develop authentication and authorization logic. And also, the users would also benefit from this service because he or she doesn't need to remember passwords and username, different passwords and username for websites. So a typical way to integrate such a single sign-on service is as follows. The identity providers, such as Google, Facebook, or Microsoft, they'll publish the SDK and also the documentation to go with the SDK. And then the application developer would integrate this SDK and then follow the instructions on the documentation. And this is an example documentation page from Facebook. And this particular documentation talks about an API, a REST API that needs to be called to initiate the single sign-on process. So you probably cannot see the details, but I've already highlighted the important part. Basically, the response type parameter can either be set to code or token. So there's one interesting question that we might want to know. If the developers follow the guides properly, will the application be secure? So before I answer this question, let me just talk about a possible implementation about the previous API according to the documentation. So let's say on Alice's device, she installs this full application client developed by an average developer. And then this application is going to call the previous API with a response type set to access token. So after Alice logs into Facebook through the pop-up dialog, if she hasn't already logged in, Facebook backend server is going to return to full application client the access token. And then the full application client is going to forward this access token to the full application's backend server. And then the backend server will try to exchange user information from Facebook using this access token. So therefore, it will probably get Alice's Facebook ID and her name and so on. And then the backend server is going to authenticate full application client as Alice. This seems to me a very reasonable implementation according to the documentation. However, this particular implementation is subject to the following attack, which can be easily explained because a lot of the steps are actually the same. So in this case, if Alice somehow installed a malicious application on her device, and this application follows largely the same step at the beginning, but instead of giving this access token to full application's backend server, it will forward this access token to, let's say, a malicious party. And then that malicious party is going to try to reuse this access token, give it to full application's backend server, and the end result is that the full application's backend server has incorrectly identified the malicious party as Alice. So this is a very serious impersonation attack. So let me just show you this video demo just to give you a better idea of what this threat looks like. But you're going to have to bear with me because the video is sometimes out of focus because we're just a poor graduate student, don't have money to buy good DVR. But let me just show you. So this, you can see, is a Saluto application. It's an application called Saluto. And here is Alice, the username. So the device already logged in as Alice. So she just used this application. And then she also managed to install, she also somehow installed this malicious application. She logs into this application. And then this is presumably the malicious party's machine. So, Again, Alice logs into Windows Live. And then on malicious party's machine, it already get the access token. So the access token is forwarded to the malicious party. And then the malicious party tries to reuse this access token by just sending a request to the Saluto's backend server. And if I refresh the browser, you can see that on here, you probably cannot see clearly, but it is Alice, the victim. So malicious party has already logged in as Alice. All right. So we might wonder who's to blame in this scenario. Is it the developers? Well, the developers have just innocently followed the developer guide. So what they do is that they retrieve this access token and then try to exchange user information from Facebook backend server. So this is a very reasonable implementation. I don't think we should blame the developers. Well, is it to blame the SDK providers? Well, the SDK providers, or in this case, Facebook or Windows Live, they can argue that they have provided the correct way to authenticate. Basically, if you retrieve the code credential, append your application secret, and then they are going to give you this signed user information, which you can then use to confirm the audience of this piece of information is your application yourself. So they have also have their reasonable explanation. So when we take a closer look at this problem, it's actually because the developer guide does not explicitly state that token flow must not be used for server-side authentication. And to put it more generally, I want to answer this question. So hopefully by the end of this talk, I will be able to convince you that the answer to this question is no, and also it is not because there are vulnerabilities in the SDKs, but it's actually due to some implicit assumptions about how to use them. So I want to be clear about implicit assumptions. These assumptions are not clearly stated in the SDK's developer guides. They're related to how the SDK should be used, and they're essential for application security property. And the goal of this project is to systematically find these implicit assumptions. So here is a general approach to this problem before I go into detail about the single sign-on system. So the idea is to use a verifier to assist the researcher to learn the behavior of the system, and also to know which part of the system is relevant to the security properties of interest. So to bootstrap this process, we need three initial inputs, basically a set of assumptions, a set of assertions, and also the model to the system. I'll introduce how we obtain these later in the talk, but let's just assume that we already have these inputs. And let's say that the verifier first time give us a counterexample. That means the model doesn't check. This means that one of the assertions can be violated. In this scenario, we're going to closely examine what is the cause for this counterexample. And in one case, it might be just due to our model is inaccurate and incomplete. In that case, we're going to try to refine the model. And in the other case, it might be due to that we're indeed missing a implicit assumption. In this case, we're going to add necessary assumptions back to the list of assumptions as input to the verifier, and we will run the verifier again. And let's say this time the verifier checks. However, this doesn't necessarily mean that the system is secure, because keep in mind that we've just modeled a small part of the system as the initial model. So there could be more relevant part of the system to model. In this case, we're going to try to enrich the model and add necessary assertions related to the model just added. As you can see, this is an iterative process, and in this process, the researcher will know more about the system, or gain a lot of insights, and actually discover a lot of implicit assumptions in this process. And until that the researchers find that all the relevant part of the system have been modeled, the process ends, and the output of this approach is the set of assumptions and the final model. So for this particular work, we're going to apply this approach to target single sign-on systems, and basically Facebook Connect and Windows Live ID Connect. So a typical system architecture for single sign-on systems looks like this. On the left side, we have the application's client side. And the right side, we have application's server side. And in the middle, we have the identity provider, or for example, Google, Facebook. And to break it further down, the client side contains client runtime. This is probably Android, your browser, or Windows 8, let's say. And then the client side SDK, this is provided by the identity provider, and also the full application's client side. And on the server side, vice versa. And when we add the malicious party into this picture, we consider the malicious party, or Mallory. They control a server that may freely communicate with the rest of the components. What it can do is it can also convince somehow Alice to install its application on Alice's device. But it must be a user-level app. So it's subject to some protection mechanisms on the device. So that defines our threat model. And here are three important security properties of interest. The first one is the authentication property. And this property means that the malware can never sign into a full application as Alice. So very easy to understand. And then the authorization property means that malware can never get access to data that Alice have not granted permission to malware. And then finally, the associating property means that the user's identity, the user's permission, and also session's identity must represent the same person at any time, all times. So these three security properties, when we put it into the big picture, serve as the guidelines for us to write the initial set of assertions. And I'll give you an example of what an assertion looks like in our modeling language. So in an authentication context, when we put this assertion in the Mallory's module, that means that Mallory can never log into the system as Alice. Okay. Now let me talk about how we model the system components. So first, let me begin by talking about how we model the client-side and server-side SDKs, because these are relatively easy to model, because they either are provided the source code, or we have access to the documentation. If we have source code to the SDK, we'll just do a line-to-line source translation, but we'll throw away some of the unimportant details, such as GUI code or networking code that out of scope threats. And if we only have documentation available, we'll try to re-implement that component according to the documentation. The runtime components are a little bit more difficult to model, because a lot of these modules don't actually have source code. We don't have source code available, or they actually don't provide any documentation at all. In this case, we're going to use debugging tools or proxy servers to probe the behavior of the APIs or those modules, and we'll try to re-implement the module in our modeling language. So far I've talked about concrete modules. And the concrete modules means that at the time of modeling, the module already have a corresponding real-world concrete implementation. However, in this case, the full application's client side and server side don't have a concrete implementation yet. So we call this abstract modules. And the way that we model these modules is to let them non-deterministically call the concrete modules. But for a full application, they must be subject to the developer guide, because we consider them as average developer. For malicious party's application, for malicious party's behavior, they largely follow the same way full application does, but it is not subject to the documentation. However, their behavior is subject to its knowledge pool, which I'll explain as follows. So let me first quickly rearrange the module. The modules above the dotted line are the test harness, and the modules under the dotted line are concrete modules. So in this case, the knowledge pool is a structure that we created to represent Mallory's understanding to the single sign-on system. At the beginning of the model execution, the knowledge pool only contains publicly known information, and also Mallory's own account with the identity provider and also the full application. But as Alice can go on to use the malicious application, and also as Mallory continues to call the concrete modules, it might learn more information. And these information are put back into the knowledge pool. And subsequent calls to other APIs, the Mallory will draw parameters from this knowledge pool. And this is how we model the Mallory's behavior. So far, I've talked about how to model the basic system components. And the initial set of assumptions is derived by looking at SDK documentation manually and to analyze what is a very reasonable developer behavior to constrain, basically, full application's behavior. And keep in mind that I've already said that this is an iterative process. So as the process goes on, we'll add more system components to the initial model, and also we'll probably uncover some implicit assumptions. And these get feedback to the set of assumptions and the model. So in this particular project, we've used Boogie as our verifier. So Boogie is a symbolic execution engine developed by MSR. It supports loop invariance and function pre-post conditions to enable unbounded verification. So now let me talk about some of the results that we discovered using this approach. So the models themselves are an important part of our contribution. So it took two lead authors 6 months to explicate three SDKs. They are Facebook single sign-on PHP SDK, Windows 8 SDK for modern applications, and also Windows Live Connect SDK. So many implicit assumptions were found. And for example, we've reported 5 cases to Facebook that fixed 4, and 3 were entitled bug bounties. And these bug bounties are 3 times the base bug bounty amount. Also, we've reported 1 case to Windows Live, and the documentation has been revised afterwards. We've also contacted OWASP working group, and they have actually added a paragraph to the security consideration sections of the OWASP 2.0 standard. In addition to these findings, we also try to test a small number of applications manually to see if they are indeed vulnerable to at least one uncovered assumption. So here is what our final SDK models look like. On the left side is the Facebook PHP source code. And on the right side, we have our Boogie programming language model. As you can see, it's more or less a line-to-line translation, but there might be a little difference because we've thrown away some unimportant code. When we don't have source code available, like I said, we're going to try to re-implement that module. For example, this is the documentation that I've shown at the beginning of this talk. And we've translated this module into the Boogie model. You can see that the parameters on the left side gets translated into the parameters on the right side, the function, the Boogie function. So now let me show you two example implicit assumptions that we found using this approach. The first vulnerability is about the Facebook PHP SDK. So this particular documentation tells the developers that they can use these three snippets to implement the single sign-on functionality. However, what this documentation doesn't tell the developer is that if the developer uses snippet 1 and snippet 3, but does not use snippet 2, this will mean that the application is vulnerable because it might leak a very important client secret or application secret to arbitrary party. And here is the important assumption that needs to be added in this model. And to translate into plain text, this means that the get logr URL function must not return an application access token to the client. So when this assumption is missing, the Boogie verifier will output a vulnerable trace that indicates that the developer, if the developer calls snippet 1 and snippet 3, then the application secret will get to the malicious party. So we've contacted Facebook for this case, and they've fixed the SDK code so that in the newer version of the SDK, this assumption is no longer needed. So we think this is the best outcome of this approach. However, there might be cases where simply fixing SDK code doesn't eliminate the need of the implicit assumptions. And let's look at this example from Windows Live. So here, the developer guide tells the developer to implement the save refresh token function, and let me enlarge it. And the instruction to this implementation is to save the refresh token associated with the user ID on the site. So when we try to model this piece of module, we think this is very confusing, and there could be easily two interpretations. One possible interpretation is to associate the refresh token with the user ID obtained from the global variable cookie, or is to just to associate the refresh token with the user ID obtained from the refresh token itself. And in the iterative process, we've already noticed that the red implementation might be vulnerable. So we would like to confirm it using our Boogie model. So we implemented both interpretations in our Boogie model, and we try to run a Boogie verifier on it. And indeed, the Boogie verifier is able to confirm that the red implementation is vulnerable by outputting a error trace, and the blue implementation is secure. So this means that the Windows Live developer guide has made an implicit assumption that every developer would like to implement their application using the red implementation, or not using the blue implementation, at least. So we've contacted Windows Live team, and they have revised the developer guide later so that hopefully it will lead to more correct implementations in the future. So in addition to all the implicit assumption findings, we've also tested some popular applications. This includes Facebook's showcase application page and also popular Windows 8 modern applications using single sign-on. And it turns out that actually more than half of them are vulnerable to at least one implicit assumption. And for example, the illustrative example role here means the access token vulnerability I've just explained at the beginning of this talk. So to sum it up, I just want to reemphasize that missed implicit assumptions can lead to many vulnerabilities when integrating third-party services. And what we advocate here is that the SDK providers explicate the SDKs before releasing them. And once an implicit assumption is found, they can try to fix the SDK code so to eliminate the need of that assumption. Or they can develop automated checker to scan applications for the vulnerability. If they cannot do the above two, they can improve the SDK documentation. Hopefully, the developers will closely follow what is written on the documentation and write secure programs. So that concludes my talk. And you can visit the project website for more information. And the model that we explicated is also available on GitHub. Thank you.
Thanks for the talk, very interesting.
Thank you.
Felix Lindner, Recurity Labs. How would you compare you said you had three people half a year building the models.
Right.
How would you compare that inefficiency to having, let's say, one good web application hacker?
Compared to what, sorry?
To one good web application hacker.
Okay.
Like someone manually thinking about it.
Right. So you're talking about like, comparing it to penetration testing or something like that. So we think that our approach is like a guided approach that uses the verifier to help us understand the system. Because if you were like a penetration tester, you also want to learn about the system that otherwise you don't know where to attack, right? So I think this approach systematically helps you to like study the behavior, and then it will help you better find the vulnerability that we believe is faster, and at the end, you will have a model, and if you believe in the model, and the model, you can use the verifier to check that there is no other assumptions needed. So I think, it can definitely be used to help pen testing at least.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Antoine Delignat from INRIA Paris. I'm interested to know whether, so in your talk, you use an attacker model that was very specific to single sign-on, and all of your example, it seems, were built on OAuth protocol, which was already analyzed by Alloy and WebSpy. And I want to know if your approach is in fact more general, because in your title you claim that this is for SDKs in general.
Right. And so yeah, that's a very good suggestion. Actually, at the beginning of the talk, I talked about this general approach to, and we for this particular work, we applied it to single sign-on system. But we definitely believe that you can try this on like payment APIs, for example, or Dropbox files APIs and stuff like that, to see how this approach performs on different type of systems. But for this particular work, we just targeted single sign-on systems. Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Adrienne Porterfelt from Google.
Right.
So it seemed like in some cases the response that your work prompted was to change the documentation. In other cases it was to actually change the SDK. Or do you think that changing the documentation is actually enough? Do you think that that will actually prevent developers from making the mistake?
So we definitely think that if the developer can change the SDK code so that they don't need to change the documentation, this will be the best case, best scenario. Because, you know, if you put the documentation out there, how many developers actually follow the lines, like one line by one line, and follow it closely, we don't know. But if you can, if the developers, the SDK providers can change the SDK code so that it doesn't need that assumption, that would be great. But if they can't do that, like the access token vulnerability, then we just have to suggest that the SDK provider put like large bold text to indicate that to indicate developers that they shouldn't do this. So yeah, definitely the SDK code revision is preferred. Thank you.